Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Kids, do you like pro wrestling? Well, we like pro wrestling too. This week in the news, Hulk Hogan, and overall just a bad week for us Gen X types. The lazy river of wrestling criticism. Whatever we want to talk about. I think a lot of this is going to be Hogan, but we'll find some things to talk about there. I don't have anything specific. And then Invader Club, Chris's pick, an interesting one, I think. Steve Blackman versus Jeff Hardy from SmackDown in 2000. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino, and yes, for some of you, a great evil force has passed away. That's right, Chuck Mangione. Noted horn player. I feel so good, his big hit. As a marching band geek, I had to play Children of Sanchez over and over and over again. A guy I listened to on a podcast has the perfect Chuck Mangione story in that he's going out to eat at this restaurant and Chuck Mangione is there and somebody notices him or a friend notices him and the owner of the restaurant is dining with this guy. It's like, please, please don't notice him, please. And they did. And then he had his flugelhorn with him and proceeded to serenade the entire restaurant with Feel So Good. Remember me? I was famous. This is gonna go into Hulk Hogan, by the way. So
that is extreme Hulk Hogan energy. Like, no one effing asked for your flugelhorn, dude.
He brought it with him to a restaurant.
I know. Oh, wow. What luck. I am Chuck Mangione, and wouldn't you know it, my horn, it's right here, adjacent to me.
You know, I could play something for you guys. Oh, don't twist my arm.
Would you like to hear my classic Feels So Good? I know you would.
Oh, all things being serious, before we get into what is a very big story in professional wrestling.
Yeah, they say only the good die young, and Hulk Hogan died this week at 71.
This is going to be a generational thing, and I can already feel it. And that's fine. I don't believe either. Well, you might mean ill will. I don't when I crack wise about him right now. Later, maybe. I think it's a little. I'm one of those prudish too soon types. And then I just did a Chuck Mangione joke, so maybe not. Maybe I'm just
Let's keep it. Jeffrey, if there's ever a man who is not bequeathed a too soon margin, it's got to be Hulk Hogan, right?
Chuck Mangione, to be honest with you.
No, I'm glad you actually took it here, because clearly Hulk Hogan's a fine candidate for waiving your too soon rights, right? Like, as you know, normally, like, the grace period, we're bequeathed this thing, but you can waive your too soon rights. And clearly Hulk Hogan, in the ensuing years, the last 25 years of his life, I think, went out of his way to waive those too soon rights. To wit, his final major public appearance, he was booed out of the goddamn building.
I know. Mine was more of a flugelhorn joke because I'm a trombone player. And hey,
I like this because it actually puts some degree of comical yet philosophical weight of like, yeah, no, you know what? There are some people who are such crud people that they don't actually get a too soon period.
Okay, let me honor somebody who was, by all rights, a cool dude before we move into someone who was a crap dude, and then go back to somebody who, by all rights, was a very nice person. Malcolm Jamal Warner also passed away. Theo Huxtable from The Cosby Show.
Oh.
And I'm going to tell you this, and I think this is possibly one of the better compliments I can give him, is that long after his fame from The Cosby Show went away, he number one, he worked regularly still, which helped. And I had friends who got to do like small improv shows with him as like a special guest or whatever. Always was just an equal, always just cool as hell. I can't find anybody who would ever say a bad word about the guy. And I know we're just over his death or whatever, but I mean, literally, I somebody forwarded me like one of his last Instagram reels or whatever. And he's just like, hey, it's morning. If you're not smiling now, you will be eventually. I just think that's the way that, I mean, that dude knew he had a blessed life. And there's nothing better than that. I'm going to leave it there. Are you old? I mean, you like The Cosby Show, or is that a little bit past your...
I didn't grow up watching it, but like here's a fine example of a guy who's sort of, you know, entitled on the converse side to a, you know, like, let's not speak ill of the dead thing, right? Like,
yes.
No, straight up. But I think like here we actually have a really interesting philosophical highlight of like, there are some people where, I mean, if they've lived an unquality good life, you wouldn't bring up that one time they cut somebody off in traffic or something like that, right? You know,
right.
They have a permanent grace period. And then there are other people who live their lives in another direction.
Hulk Hogan passed away today. Hulk Hogan, after Bruno Sammartino, in the chronological order of the stars in wrestling, some would argue Ric Flair. Hulk Hogan, semi-responsible for two giant booms in wrestling. First, the nationwide expansion, being the figurehead slash mascot of the WWF with Vince McMahon. Then jumping over to WCW and being the, I wouldn't say linchpin. He was there to bring shock value to the NWO, which then launched the Attitude Era. It's weird for me a little bit because I grew up in the period, but I also, by the time I was exposed to Hulk Hogan and WWF, you have to understand, and this is going to sound really strange to some people, but I'm old. Remember that. I'm a geezer. I'm a member of AARP. There's a fun fact for you, Chris. The WWF would not come south of Washington, D.C. when I was growing up because they couldn't sell tickets to any of the arenas. This is up until about, I'd say, 92, 93, because Jim Crockett Promotions was the wrestling of the Mid-Atlantic area, and they would try the occasional show down there, and nobody would come. People remember Black Friday in the Atlanta area, but it's also one of those things where, and this is true for a lot of my friends, so this is just personal anecdotes. Like, I didn't get cable until I was like 13 or 14, and that was really my first exposure to WWF hardcore, and it was like a Tuesday Night Titans, which sucked. Tuesday Night Titans was stupid. That was do you know what Tuesday Night Titans was, Chris?
I know that name. I feel like I've even seen an episode of it at some point.
It was Vince McMahon trying to be Johnny Carson.
Oh, the talk show thing. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. I have seen that.
And I was so excited to finally, man, now I can finally watch more wrestling because I could get some AWA on ESPN. I could get some UWF on Home Team Sports, but I had never, other than Saturday night's main event, I couldn't get a lot of WWF. And I watched that, and I went, this sucks. And WWF always felt like big, gaudy, slow, lumbering, the land of giants, cartoon characters, because of course you had Hulk Hogan's Rockin' Wrestling, the Rockin' Wrestling connection directly attributed to Hogan and Cyndi Lauper and Lou Albano, etc., etc. Hulk Hogan was a great mascot. He was Chef Boyardee for professional wrestling. And that's,
I don't think he was irreplaceable, though. As I look back on it, I think that he was the guy, but other people could have been the guy.
I think with the right push, you are correct. I also think there's a lot to his, in the 80s at least. I can't tell you I'm an expert. I mean, we watched something for Vader Club for, you know, the Bockwinkel match. And basically, we know Vince McMahon stole everything that Vern Gagne did for Hogan and just kind of like whittled it down to marketable sound bites so that we could do that. That's always been Vince McMahon's move.
Yeah,
but there is something like, to the phony Americana that he espoused to the kids and stuff that really I don't think anybody else could have, at least in terms of, like, Andre was close, but Andre was such a, he was an attraction. He couldn't have been the everyday guy.
Could have done with Macho Man.
Maybe. But I mean, he had the crazy eyes and the weird look and the raspy voice. And he was a bad guy for the most part during that, when he had Elizabeth and they were playing up.
He still was really over as a baby face. Like, he was still always a fan favorite, even when he was a bad guy. I think there, you got a lot of words in here, so I just kind of want to weigh in on a few of these points, right? I think that, yes, Hulk Hogan was saddled with the Americana gimmick, but the difference between Hogan and Flair is stark in terms of what they can provide to you in utility. Flair, a much more multidimensional promo. Not necessarily dependent on just the taglines or whatever, could do an entire promo sans doing any of those taglines or pepper one in at the end. But if you pulled it out, there's still a perfectly fine promo there. His matches had the ability to make other talents, and Flair was often utilized to get other people into the upper mix, even when Flair was being a bit of a baby about hanging onto that belt as much as possible. He was still very good and gifted at making other people look like stars. Sting, for example. Hogan, far less so. During that run, Hogan basically makes nobody. I guess you could argue the Ultimate Warrior, but even that's sort of one of those ones that's always been a little bit disputed in terms of the finish. So when I say that a lot of other people could fill the role here, Hogan, in terms of in-ring, is kind of a very easy value above replacement problem. And Hogan on the microphone, in a lot of ways, is a very easy value above replacement problem. You need someone who has a persona that fits that a little bit tighter, who fits that, you know, like Roddy Piper is a great promo, maybe doesn't fit that particular image. Macho Man, great promo, doesn't fit that particular image. Although you could just as easily make him Macho Mad for America. And I could totally see a Bizarro world in 85, 86, where you get the madness stuff, but he's also like a mega patriot. And like Macho Man, like, loves America. Oh yeah, brother. Like, you know, 4th of July. Like I could absolutely see him snap into it, waving the American flag and doing all of this stuff. I do not think in a lot of ways he was, as I said, he was the guy. I don't think he was an irreplaceable guy. I think a number of people could have occupied the guy role. He was the guy. And I think, you know, the ultimate tension with him, I mean, looking at legacy, is that he, in his personal life, then went out of his way to really undermine the gimmick every possible way you could. Starting, you know, I mean, what was it? Say your prayers, eat your vitamins, and love your country.
Say your prayers, drink your milk, and eat your vitamins.
I mean, we do steroids. We then review him to be a man who does not seem to be very biblically motivated. Let's say that politely.
Say your prayers, eat your vitamins, believe in yourself.
And believe in yourself. I mean, that last one.
He believed in himself.
He absolutely did. But apparently what that meant is make your own narrative. You know, believe whatever you want about yourself.
I'm going to push back slightly here. I don't think you're wrong necessarily. But as an avatar, which is what Hogan was. And I think the better... I think you're right in comparing to Hogan comparing to Flair in terms of, you know, mouthpiece and guy who carried the company. But the guy that Hogan idolized when he first came in, and then I think Vince kind of took that and put his own shine on the Americana stuff and did it with good reason.
Superstar Billy Graham.
Because he didn't like that. Well, there is that, but he really liked Dusty Rhodes.
That's true.
And Vince... did not look Vince trailer park kid from North Carolina didn't like that hillbilly crap that Dusty was bringing, but I think cynically saw the patriotism thing, especially, you know, I mean, the avatar was always Hogan versus foreign heel until he basically became the prototype for Sting, in which all his friends would get jealous of him and then start turning on him, which was also an avatar for Vince McMahon. All champions of Vince McMahon were avatars of Vince McMahon. That's some facet that Vince thought of himself.
Yeah, anytime, right, like behind every great man is six worms trying to stab him in the back.
Yes, or I'm a Horatio Alger story, even though my father gave me this opportunity, and then I stabbed all his friends in the back, but that was because they were going to do that to me.
Right.
Kind of a thing.
I wouldn't have been stabbing them so much if they weren't going to stab me.
But I mean, he was such a harmless gimmick, and there was a little bit of menace to, and for good reason, a couple of these people, but like to Roddy, Savage, Snuka might have been a player, possibly, because the kids loved him flying around, but he couldn't talk for crap.
Steamboat, potentially.
Steamboat, but Steamboat was dull. I mean, he couldn't cut a promo to save his life.
I mean, but this is the thing, too, with the Hogan promos. What really were they? I mean, you're basically, they're like
crass commercialism from the 80s. That's what they were.
And kind of a primrose path to the catchphrases.
Yes.
So...
because you remember, this is a good point, because remember, when we watched that Bockwinkel Hogan thing, they had about four or five, I mean, he had his promo, and they had Hulkamania, they had a couple other things in there, but it's kind of like, they took out a few of those things, they took out a few of his moves, they streamlined it down to, hey, we can package the mass, it's pure 1980s mass packaging capitalism. Of a guy that could have been more, honestly, we think. I mean, we've seen the Hogan Muda match as well. That wasn't half bad. We know that Hogan knew how to wrestle.
Right. Someone was like, well, he never had a good match. It's like, no, I'm like, actually, he probably had about 20 to 30 good matches over his career. It's just that, like, you would also never say that about Ric Flair, right? You know, like, yeah, like right, Ric Flair. Right. Yeah, right. So, or Savage or any of these other guys. And so, like, in that sense, I mean, if Andre hadn't been breaking down as much as he had, and he had, like, maybe a better mouthpiece, you probably could have sold, like, Andre as the American, as, like, you know, like the immigrant dream in the 80s, a guy who comes from another part of the world and decides that he loves America is, like,
maybe
our giant.
Maybe, but remember, Vince is like the old studio casting guy. And while Hogan didn't have a full head of hair, that would have been the perfect guy for him if he had a
Right.
But Vince was a bodybuilding mark. And always has been. That's what he looked. And that's, you know, that's the alpha male to me, as a guy with those.
He worked sort of for Vince, but I, you know. I don't know. I just, as I look back at his overall talent set, he got the push, but it's unclear to me that he's particularly exceptionally worthy of the push in any, you know, like compared to a lot of other guys.
Okay.
Because there are a lot of roided out dudes in the 80s.
True.
You know,
and you could take it somebody from Minneapolis, but in any of that circle, you know, Hawk, Animal, even, you know, Hennig later, Rude.
How about Kerry Von Erich? If they had gotten
Kerry Von Erich.
Yeah, right. You know, that's what I'm saying. When I'm saying, like, Hogan's irreplaceability is something I would heavily dispute. It's just, yeah, there are a lot of other guys that are available for central casting for Vince McMahon. Yeah. Who could come out there and say, train, eat your vitamins, drink your milk, and believe in yourself. And Hulkamania rules. Remember that, Jack. That's 30 ahead. Seconds of stock phrasing in every one-minute promo.
If he could have gotten his hands on Kerry Von Erich away from his father and his family. Kerry wasn't exactly dynamite on the mic, but he didn't need to be. Say these lines. Go with it.
Keep practicing these five phrases over and over, Kerry. I want you to say them 100 times a day.
It's like a scene.
Train your vitamins. No, Kerry. No, train your vitamins.
Train your prayers. No.
Milk your vitamin. No.
You dumbass Texan. Say the effing line that's on the paper. You effing inbred idiot. Come here. No wonder your father was a...
Milk
Nazi
yourself
gimmick.
And believe in vitamins.
No. Damn you. Oddly enough, my favorite past the Hogan story in terms of coming up that's perfect is the Briscoes saw something in him, said, would you like to be a wrestler? Gave him to Hiro Matsuda, and Hiro Matsuda broke his leg allegedly in their first time. Which is such the old carny, let's see if he has what it takes to come back and have the right mindset type crap that a lot of
Clearly that shit works.
Yeah.
Clearly the abused don't become the abuser in that system.
No, not at all.
Not at all.
Jesus.
I mean, so then let's talk a little later era on him too here, right?
Okay. I was going chronologically, but we can do that.
Yeah, yeah. I think his heel turn could have been one of the all-time great heel turns. And I think we just discussed it a few weeks ago. The problem is that he didn't realize the character he was casted to be was the nu metal dad. Like, he essentially was 6 years ahead of the Affliction dad vibe and the Affliction dad energy. He's like, you know, that dad who listens to Staind and Linkin Park and like wants to tell you
Affliction
that
Affliction t-shirts at the UFC.
Yes, right. He wants to tell you that he really liked the band Crazy Town back in the day. And you're not going to believe what the name of the lead singer was. It was Shifty Shell Shock. Isn't that crazy? That is Hulk Hogan's energy in 1996. And he thought he was cool. And he insisted he still thought he was cool. And he insisted on his presentation still being like, I am cool. Like, the Voodoo Child entrance was never allowed to be sufficiently lame and cringe. It was always done like it was kind of badass when it was lame as hell.
One of my fantasy wrestlers had Voodoo Child at the time. I was so angry about that. Because this actually goes to a question that I have pondered for decades, to be honest with you. Was Hogan jumping to WCW a good thing? And let me explain. WCW, when Hogan jumped, I believe 94, 93 is the timeline on that.
Friggin' dead.
They had moved on from being, they wanted to be Vince. Let's face it. They wanted to be Vince McMahon. They had characters like PN News and the Ding Dongs and Norman the Lunatic and, not sure Evad Sullivan was in there quite yet. I think he's a little bit later, but they were trying dumb crap as opposed to what the fan base of WCW wanted, which was the Horsemen era back. So that's why they were jumping to things like ECW and Smoky Mountain.
But and the stuff said, that was working in WCW at that time was like Cactus Jack versus Vader. The stuff that would actually get real crowd reactions and people would be like, that was cool. It was that stuff.
Yes, but Bischoff had the Vince envy, and he then made the deal with Disney and their studios, taking it out of Center Stage and going to, was it Walt Disney World Hollywood or Hollywood Studios or whatever, wherever the taping was at the time. You know, the big parade. I felt a little death inside because I this was not my wrestling. I didn't want to watch this crap. I don't want to watch Hulk Hogan be a star. I want to watch the Horseman break Hulk Hogan's leg. That's what I want to see. And there was a point on a 95 or 96 Nitro, a very early one, where Hogan has the Pillman Benoit Anderson flair, I think. Horseman, all four of them begging off. And I just go, that's the moment it died for me. That's the moment that I'm going to go do bad stand-up comedy. Because not even bad. I was actually pretty good. But, you know, that stuff. But if he's not signed, then we don't get the NWO and we don't get the Attitude Era. If the lameness of the Hogan era WCW doesn't exist, nobody thinks, oh, we got to break out of this somehow. I struggle with that because it's one of those things where like Bischoff sees the angle in Japan and goes, we could do that here. And Hogan's getting a little
stale. I mean, they did the hardest part of his career to analyze because Hogan on the shows and kind of when you pull the camera out sufficiently, in my opinion, is clearly a net bad, but I absolutely see affirmative cases that make the argument net bad, not like complete bad. I think his, in a way, him leaving WWF allowed WWF to become better. It allowed them to move into the Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart transitional era and all that stuff, which is frankly better than the 92-93 Lex Luger trying to cling to Hoganism's sort of era. Like the morph into the small guy era is facilitated by Hogan's departure. And WCW was so kind of floundering as a company at that point, bringing him in, even when it didn't work, was still probably good. I don't know. I think WCW might have been fine, though. I don't know. He drew a lot of big houses for them on the heel turn. It's just the problem is he didn't go away. Like, no one could tell Hogan it's time for you to go away. And so, like, that's why I keep saying net bad. Is that, like, if you had done this and you had his contract, like, set to end January 1st, 1998, after dumping the belt to Sting at Starrcade, it's a great heel run, right? He has, like, a year and a half with the belt. He is dominant. He is leading the dominant faction. He's on the video games. He gets everything he wants. And then we sunset him. And we move on to our next phase. But Hogan wasn't going to let himself do that. And he always saw himself as ineffable and irreplaceable.
I'm going to push back slightly. And I know that this is your fandom. So I recognize the bias here. That Bret Shawn run that we all love and stuff, nobody watched it. In terms of the mass appeal of wrestling versus Hogan. You know, from the 80s. I mean, but anything would be dwarfed by that.
I guess what I'm saying is a transitional element is more in the match stylings. It allowed the company to really actually start learning like a different style of match versus the type of match they had been doing in 89 to 92.
Yeah, they had to be dragged kicking and screaming though. Because
no, I'm not saying they loved doing it. And I know they were resisting against it, but they still had to change.
Diesel, Razor.
They were still trying to get
Brett and Sean kind of out of the way. So
no,
so
but
size fetish. Good.
Let us not forget Diesel Mabel.
Oh, please let me forget Diesel Mabel. Good God. And then of course we get post WCW Hogan. We get the North Korea thing. We get Pitchman. Oh, George Foreman grill was given to me originally. We get consistent lying Hogan out there.
I mean, there is, I think, more than one multi-hour documentary on all of the lies that yes. Hulk Hogan told throughout his career about his life and biography. And it matters because people do try to write a biography on this guy, and you just kind of keep running into, well, that's not true. Well, that's not true. Well, that's not true either.
And then we get into the crass commercialism Hogan later stage when his family has a lifestyle to maintain. So we get Hogan Knows Best.
Oh, wait. Don't skip the album. The album where Hulkster in Heaven is put on. Again, so like when you waive your too soon privileges, right?
I'm trying to be a good person occasionally, Chris.
Moments like this are where your too soon privileges are up for grabs. Where he created an entirely fake death story about a kid who died watching a Hulk Hogan match and recorded a song about it.
And his little supplicant Jimmy Hart,
friggin'
hanger-on. That whole thing just annoyed the hell out of me. And then, of course, the N-word tape. And again, we talked about this. I think it might have been during the Rob era, but I think we've talked about it occasionally. I am still convinced when Hogan cynically tried to get somebody to buy his sex tape, it was stolen by Bubba the Love Sponge and had no buyers, that it got leaked so that somebody would publish it so that they could sue. I am convinced of that. Now, don't get me wrong. I shed no tears for the death of Gawker. I don't
either, but the way it died was extraordinarily stupid.
There you go.
Right? Like, I don't, in a way, it's like, I don't shed tears for the victim, but, or for Gawker here, the victim, but I absolutely do not look at, like, Hogan or Bubba the Love Sponge or any of the parties on the plaintiff's side as legitimately aggrieved, because I think somebody... They're just not.
I'm not meaning any harm against... David Bixenspan and I have a complicated relationship at times, but I like the guy. And he worked at... he did Deadspin for a while. He did a couple other of the outlets there. So I don't mean anything by that or the people that work there. I just meant
Gawker as an organization had already always been kind of playing right at the edges of the line. So yes. The idea that they were going to end up in a scenario like this at some point was not unfathomable. And I think anyone who thinks otherwise being a bit naive, it's just that this particular case, again, around the contours that at least one of the two parties, possibly both of them, actually wanted the sex tape out in the first place.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's the thing.
All the other people who got themselves either overtly or covertly involved in the lawsuit. It was truly stupid shit.
I am sorry, but I watched the Gawker leak in terms of the pillow talk between Bubba the Love Sponge's wife and Hogan, and it is the most contrived, pardon my French, shit I've ever watched. Hogan's complaint, oh, that shellfish made me gassy. Oh yeah, that's right. Turn her on with that, Hulk. And he's talking about how bloated and gassy he feels. I'm like, brother, I know we're trying to talk about this is naturalism. No, it's not. It's such crap. And
the reality TV Hulk, I mean, I think God. To like sort of parse his legacy here, I think in a way he sort of like became emblematic of where culture was drifting in the 2000s, where it was like all sorts of reality TV, everything from Hogan Knows Best to with the Kardashians to American Idol to The Apprentice to all of this stuff. And it all like that became such a dominant arc around culture and what a lot of mainstream people loved to watch.
We'll get into that with Ozzy a bit, but at the same time,
the Osbournes, right? Like same thing.
I think there's a significant difference there, though. This was Hogan, and a bunch of other people would do this too. The Kardashians actually got away with it, but it's like, we're vapid and want money, and we're good looking. That makes us interesting people.
That trend got so out of hand that, yeah, we started. I like Hogan would actually be like the second wave derivative wave of this. Like the Sharon, the Osbournes would be the first wave. They are interesting people. Yes. They do lead an interesting life. They have an interesting dynamic. And like their love, which is real, is really interesting and complex and different from the way that you and your partner might love each other. And that's interesting. You know, whereas the Hogans don't love each other. Let's be real here. Insofar as there's love, it's in this weird, it's on a weird marginal level, I'd argue. And then like they're not entertaining and they're not particularly interesting. Hogan is not an interesting guy.
His ex is kind of a gold digger. His daughter wanted to be famous, and his son is a tool, jerk ass meathead.
He's horrible. Right. Like they're not intriguing figures from that standpoint. And then obviously, you know, Hogan has multiple incidences where he is expressing his views about African Americans. One's involving his daughter and one's involving his son. I'm not going into either one of them, but the idea that I have to say that statement at all does not bear well on your legacy.
And then he couldn't go gently into that night, we couldn't celebrate him as a legend because miss you if you don't go away.
Well, and there's just this, you know, after so many chapters, I mean, think about like, this is, I mean, it's not surprising it's Hulk Hogan, but I think even with other wrestlers who have as, you know, important of a career, like a Flair, like Flair might actually get as long because of the different chapters. Hogan has so many different cultural chapters. And this last one is the, you might air quote as the bathing in glory chapter of his life. He chose to not go away, to keep showing up in the headlines. And every time he'd show up in the headlines, he'd put himself on the wrong side of the news cycle for one way or another. And he never seemed contrite about anything ever. And I think for a lot of people that I'll say watching TV today as I was doing stuff around the house and chores, just seeing feedback for non-wrestling fans, that Hulk Hogan getting booed by the crowd moment actually permeated a lot deeper than I think a lot of us realize. You know, like we don't think of that one necessarily exploding past the bubble for a segment that was it even on the air? But it did make it onto TikTok and it did make it onto social media. And as a clip, it has been clipped multiple times, and Hogan getting booed. And then coming out of that, he couldn't even really come to terms with why do people not like me? You know, I thought like that final beat in a way is a really narratively satisfying, if not quote unquote, happy ending to his arc of being just oblivious parts about himself.
I'll put a bit of a coda on that. Number one, if you were an aging boomer who doesn't hang out on social media, the RNC appearance, everybody kind of went, well, yeah, that's Trump doing pro wrestling. And there was no real deep analysis of that. And they were unaware. A lot of people in the podcast world were unaware of all those controversies, to be honest with you, hearing that. But I think the most egregious was still when he came back.
That gets into a one hand doesn't know what the other hand's doing in culture problem.
No, yeah. I understand that. Yeah. But the most egregious was when they brought him, I forget, there was the all hands on deck meeting or whatever. And I think Hogan came in and didn't apologize. And the New Day were just like, F that dude. No, we're not going to do something with him. He never apologized. He just came in there and went, hey, we all good? And it's like, no. So they ended up sticking him with like pure people like Bailey I think Alexa Bliss also at one point did something. I mean, it was so cynical and so ham-fisted trying to rehab this guy who made us a lot of money so that we can make more money with him out there as an ambassador of our product. And was just
going back to his skill set too. When he doesn't have the catchphrases to fall back on, he can't really do much. You know, he couldn't get Bayley or Alexa Bliss over. He's not really a good ambassador of a lot of stuff. Cause like he can come out there and be like, yeah, brother, dude, Jack beer company, brother, dude, Jack. Yeah. Like, you know, like he doesn't, he can't really put together that banger paragraph about the beer company or the banger paragraph about any product, generally speaking, that he tried to sell. He's not a great salesman. If it's not Hulkamania merchandise, he's not selling it.
Yeah, but you're putting his albatross around other people who people likes neck. That's the other problem too, right?
Yeah.
That was my thing about Alexa Bliss and Bayley, who is, I mean, how do you hate Bayley? I mean, when she's playing the character, sure, but I mean, there's, I'm sure somebody has something unfriendly to say, but at least as an on-screen presence, it's like you don't connect those two. What the hell's wrong with you? Unless you're being very cynical. So let's end our Hogan talk there and get to generals gather in their Wait, what is it? Generals gather in their masses?
The masses, or... yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, just like wishes at just black masses. Black
masses. Okay, they rhyme. Yeah, I was he rhymes
mass, he,
masses with masses. I thought I had it wrong. I was so scared to blow it, and then I blew it because I wasn't confident in myself.
It's more like the only rhyme with the same word that is allowed in music.
That is such an awesome song. And it was used for a Survivor Series promo video that was
right, yeah,
quite good. But yes, Ozzy Osbourne, WWE Hall of Famer 2021. For my childhood, very interesting. He accompanied the British Bulldogs against the dream team of Brutus Beefcake and Greg Valentine with Lou Albano. He accompanied the British Bulldogs in WrestleMania 2. And he called Vince McMahon and wanted that as a personal favor because he liked wrestling. Ozzy is a complicated guy in my life because I was raised very fundamentalist Christian, and he was he's the guy who bit chickens' heads off of the satanic panic a little bit. But, you know, once I could listen to Black Sabbath and Bark at the Moon and, you know, him and Jeff Beck, I have that right. You know, I enjoy his music. I am not a huge Ozzy fan, admittedly. But I don't deny that I, you know, Crazy Train's awesome. You know, everything like that. Let me put this to you, because we just talked about Hogan Knows Best. And the most fascinating thing to me about that Ozzy Osbourne show is how this guy, the collective face of the 1980s satanic panic and stuff, and his wife, led such a bourgeois lifestyle.
And he's such, at his core, a puppy dog family man.
Yes.
Yeah, right. Like I mean, if any, you know, it's really
and
funny.
And it's not an act, and it's not put upon.
No, nothing did more to completely defang the mid-1980s satanic panic, Ozzy Osbourne's The Nexus of All Evil, to like watch the Osbournes and go like, them? Really? Like all of them? They're like goth. They're like gothy. He's a freaking puppy dog. Really, you think this guy's like actually like it got like this? Come on.
I was scared watching him because it looked like he had already onset dementia at times for me.
But this, going back to the wrestling tie-in, I mean, for example, one of the things that I have heard, I don't know if it's true or not, but the scene that he did with Penelope Spheres for Decline of Western Civilization Part
right.
2, where he's making breakfast, that was a work, that Ozzy was working there. And if it is a work, it's an all-time work, because it got over on a lot of different people.
Well, I was using pro wrestling again because Jericho did that scene, and Jericho got to do the scene in WWE when he was doing the, he likes to call it his Anton Chigurh thing, where he's doing the quiet, you know, just being the stoic guy coming out and cutting like low grade promos. But he did that Ozzy Osbourne making breakfast scene when he was part of the Inner Circle in the early days of AEW. Yeah, no, that meant a lot to, I mean, that was,
yeah,
I remember watching that movie. That
was and if that is, you know, if it indeed it was a work by Osbourne, to have it be homage by Jericho, who's made a band called Fozzy, F Ozzy. Basically, like, I mean, it just speaks to his impact. Look, you know, going do a little compare and contrast between Hogan and Ozzy. I think Ozzy, of course, had a much better drop kick. But to be a little bit more serious, though, you look at Ozzy's career. Well, oh, come on, that was good. That was good. That's quality stuff.
Random.
No, you look at his career. I'm talking about making people, right? Ozzy, actually, in his solo career, made a lot of people. Along his way, his solo career was decidedly not just about himself. A lot of other solo artists, you know, and this is no knock on them. I mean, for example, there's guys like Peter Gabriel. I love Peter Gabriel, great band leader. Didn't make anybody. Ozzy made Randy Rhoads. Ozzy made Jakey Lee.
That's
Ozzy
what I was saying. Zach Wilde.
Yeah, yeah, Randy Rhoads, sorry. Jakey Lee. You said Jeff Beck.
I'm sorry.
I figured you merged like Jakey Lee and Randy Rhoads or something. But
yeah,
like, yeah, there's a number of different guitar players that Ozzy helped make the careers of, and then Ozzy made Ozfest, which was one of the this massive music thing. So it's like, you know, it is obviously different arenas, different industries and everything. Ozzy is the major marketing force that helps launch lots of other people along the way. He's the big whale who creates a berth in the ocean that other smaller animals are able to swim along and pick up speed off of. Whereas Hulk Hogan is a big bulky ship that you need to get out of the way of or get hit, run into the hull of, you know,
Axl Rose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? No, like Ozzy really was extraordinarily giving in a professional way that, frankly, I think a lot of people who fancy themselves better businessmen or more business minded or whatever would actually, you know, be well to take, you know, example off of. You part of what we're looking at, not just merely in the songs, is all the people he brought in. And then it doesn't diminish the fact that Ozzy's oftentimes just the singer on a lot of his own solo material, because part of what that suggests is quality delegation. He routinely was able to find good personnel who would come in and fill in the gaps and make an Ozzy record sound like an Ozzy record. He trusted people. He was able to give to get. Ozzy and Hogan really are night and day in a lot of ways in terms of, because like Hogan's selling you this godly, say your prayers, drink your milk, all that stuff, right? Ozzy was selling you this, Black Sabbath, I eat the heads off of bats thing. But like behind the scenes,
yes,
couldn't be more opposite, right? Behind the scenes, I want my kid to act like Ozzy Osbourne in their personal dealings. I want my child to be someone who looks at other people, respects what they do so much that they trust them with the football. They pass the ball knowing they're going to get the ball back in a better position. I don't want my kid to grow up thinking I'm going to be great man Hulk Hogan, and if anyone tries to step up to me, I need to jackboot them down, because heaven forbid anyone come close, I must make an island and defend it. You know, Ozzy's the model, not Hulk, in the end.
I love everything you said there, Chris. And it's not that I wasn't listening, but my inner voice is in there kicking me going, how could you not remember Randy Rhoads, you effing idiot? It's like, the comments are going to suck on that. Let's do a rapid fire Lazy River. There's not a lot there. And let's get out of here after Vader Club.
We talk like show vibes or whatever this week.
Yeah, here were my points that I had. I thought Punk and Gunther was awesome as a promo. It rocked. They have great chemistry. It's everything I want in a promo. It keeps it in the world. It doesn't make any wink, wink, nudge, nudge. You used to be an AEW thing. They may have referenced UFC, but look, that's part of his life, and I get that. But it's like right now he's here. And so let's keep it there. But it was mostly, I'm going to do my best to beat this guy, and I'm going to give it everything I have. And Gunther's like, I'm going to choke you out. I'm going to kick your ass, and I'm going to like it. As opposed to, let's put on a great show for the people, Alfalfa.
I want the real CM Punk. Say what you will about WWE's overall world right now or whatever, yes, at times. Cena, I do think everything kind of around Cena stinks, but like, there are lots of things I like. One thing that does not happen on WWE that does occur on AEW all the time, and it really is world killing, is I need the real so-and-so.
Yes.
Will the real Gunther please step up? I need no more moratorium, a lifetime ban on the real Slim Shady promos.
The real Hangman, the real Mox. I think the real Danielson, the real Punk, I think they had a promo of.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, then why are we wasting our time watching this if you are all a bunch of frauds?
Yeah, I know. Like, from now on, I'm just going to have my friend who watches this show every week call me and tell me, hey, Chris, the real John Moxley's wrestling this week. You want to watch? Like,
this isn't Dean Ambrose. This is the real John Moxley.
No, it's been a lot of crap for about 3 months here, but the real one's about to show up, Chris. You want to see?
Yeah, I'll go through my other quick points and I'll let you do yours. I thought the whole Hurt Business Syndicate MJF breakup was forced, and it's probably a false flag, and that's fine. But working for Copeland made no sense, and they've now gone back and gone into their lore of bringing everything about them back in, because they were originally gonna be this APA type thing, and then it's like not, and then they were heels, and now they're baby faces. That's fine. JCJ now holds the TNA women's title. That's interesting. But I thought it was time for Mike Santana to win it on Slammiversary against both Joe Henry and Trick Williams. But speaking of Trick Williams, I thought his aura was friggin' awesome in that promo. And then we bring out Undertaker. He gets scared and he choke slams him.
Right up until that, I even loved his outfit, because it was like, yes, Trick Williams trying to dress like an impression of the Dead Man. Like, yes, it was the Trick or Taker. And I'm like so down with him, like basically bringing in elements of his opponent's fashion and appropriating them and working them into his own image to basically use that as an intimidation factor. And then, yes, he went bug-eyed. He did a bug-eyed
show. Yes, he did. Oh, my God.
Whoa, what? Wow. That's a Hashina Macha Mamma Mia. But, yeah, no, I don't. Like,
I just was like, imagine if you had let, because I know they're plugging this dumbass LFG show, which does nothing. I mean, again, it's confusing everything when you have Evolve, TNA, and LFG in your NXT show and you don't heavily do your NXT. But at the same time,
they have the AEW belt problem now, where there's just way too many freaking belts in this universe.
Yes,
suddenly.
And imagine if Trick had beat down the American Badass. What it would have done for Trick Williams. I don't mean just a slam, but that would make him better than Obafemi, and we can't have that right now. You know,
no,
that kind
I know.
Of thing.
Actually, that would have been such a great, like, Gorilla Monsoon. God love him. He was like, let Vader beat me up. That'll make him really big. And Undertaker would be the perfect candidate for this, because everyone knows that you can even have Undertaker do a promo 2 weeks later. Like, if I was still in my prime, I'd do this. And then someone comes up and goes, I got you, Taker. But the idea, the Trick Williams, the TNA champion with his damn belt on, is going to get choke slammed by the geriatric Taker and sell that like bloody death. I thought that just absolutely did nothing for him and probably did less than that.
Undertaker giving off those Conan, I'm still from the street vibes. at 50 whatever, and he's in Iran and whatnot, the American old ass. I mean, I like the character, but that's the time. Now was the time when you reintroduce him as a guy cosplaying at the San Diego Comic Convention, you know, like William Shatner doing a Star Trek panel. Now's the time to beat him. I have nothing further, Your Honor. You can do yours, and then we'll get into your pick, unless you want to just go.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Let us swing over to Dynamite again. What I had hoped for to be the week where we could really reestablish what the AEW universe looks like going forward. And once again, a lack of creativity really seems to be showing up on the narrative side here. Now, there was a lot of good work on this show. Just want to get that in there before all the defenders come at us. No, the work was fine. But let's talk about the promos and the talking and that sort of thing, because that's where I see the problems. I think Will Ospreay's injury promo did more harm than good. I think if he had came out and stuck to, I am injured, I love working for you fans here, I've been working injured, I guess maybe saying a few other things to cover Tony Khan's ass legally, because it did kind of feel like certain lines in there were to expressly cover Tony Khan's ass that he was letting this man work with a broken neck or whatever. Then you stop. Like, this, it's so good that we brought the belt home, boys thing. this is the story now, and it's a lame story. I'm sorry. All of the baby faces should not be celebrating like it is the end of Star Wars Episode 4 and we've just blown up the Death Star, because another baby face, one of their rivals has the belt. Like, if you are a competitor in this company, the belt not being held by a dickhead is actually not enough of a reason to exist. You, as a kayfabe character, joined this company to get that belt. Like, Paige, nice guy. He's in my way. This is not this huge moment of elation. It's just, good for him. Gonna beat him. Good for him. Let me go see if I can have a match with him. Good for him. I'll wish him well, shake his hand, and see if I can get a match. You know what I mean? Like it's not this, now I can sleep at night. Now my work here is done, and I'm returning to my home planet. It had, like, the Poochie energy at the end of this.
I'm going to get neck surgery. I might be back in a month for Forbidden Door. What? It's neck surgery. I assume and this is for an appearance, not yeah, to yes. work it.
No, God, I know, right? Like, C3 and C6, and like, they're, you know, we have great doctors here. I'm going to be back in 4 weeks after neck surgery. Really? Really?
Really? Really?
Really? Like, yeah. That's all I got on that. Moving on here, we then had, and we already talked about the clawing and scratching promo with Adam Page and Jon Moxley. This is Death Rider stuff. Just continues to go nowhere. And then the Death Rider's formidability only drops further with this Mark Briscoe stuff. Now, if you want to establish Mark Briscoe as a winner and show that MJF's whole, you can't win the big one, is wrong. Mark Briscoe needs more than a small package finish on Claudio Castagnoli. He needs...
Main event Claudio Castagnoli.
Main event Claudio Castagnoli. He needs to hit the J-Driller.
Yes.
He actually needs to channel some of Jay Briscoe. It basically kind of be screaming, Jay lives in me or something. Like the whole thing that MJF was saying beforehand, that like, you're not your brother or whatever. Like, basically Mark, now the story has to be, he needs to rebut that and basically show that like, he's not his brother, but he can be in flashes, that his brother, that they share the same genes, and that like the Briscoe fight is Briscoe fight. You know, like basically Mark needs to show that there's continuity. That's right. The story now. And simply getting a banana peel small package does not actually do anything in service of the story. And I'm going to say it again, because it's worth repeating. I do not think the kosher pickle stuff, which, pardon my French here, but I'm going to articulate what we're actually getting at in code with this kosher pickle thing. Small Jewish dick. I don't think this small Jewish dick stuff does Mark Briscoe any good whatsoever. I think it's a bad look for the company too. Oh, by the way, I think, yes, a company that likes to tout itself on its values to go into a stereotype that is a trope stereotype and have a baby face do it, all the less. Is it still crickets on that discourse, Jeff? Am I still the loudest voice in that one? The guy going to Durango, Colorado to fill in some bass dates for a reggae band this weekend? Still me? Not one of the full-time journalists who gets paid for this shit?
Yeah, but Saudi Arabia. You know, it. I get that. I agree.
AEW doesn't do anything.
I think it's just what I think they don't see it. I got to be honest with you. I think they don't see it. I think, oh, people chanted it, so they're okay with it.
Man, if kosher pickle goes over your head, that sounds weird. But if kosher pickle goes over your head, let me suggest to you that you are not the word woke would not describe your status. Right. You are decidedly asleep at the wheel in life.
Nope, I agree.
There's that. We have more Don Callis boredom. I find Ricochet and GOA to be another faction that exists with no particular energy about it.
Let me push a little bit. I liked that GOA got some, or that
they
one
look
of them
better
got
in this output. Yeah.
Yes. But yes, they're there to take falls for Ricochet. They're not there to really get built necessarily.
Yeah.
So I agree with that.
And then, you know, we turned Billy Starks in that match against Tony Storm. And then we had the Athena stuff. And Tony Storm just continues to be like a slapstick baby face for me. The slapstick
really
secret. Eats up the match.
Billy Starks is a heel. She's not a baby face. And the Athena thing is heelish, and now it's heelish and goofy. Like they're what they're doing is they went back to step one of the ROH gimmick as opposed to letting it flourish in terms of the growth and showing what she had become, and says, let's go back and tell the story, when the story was she became kind of a badass after being a goofy heel doing this minion character type of thing. And yeah, it comes off as two goofy characters fighting each other for a title. Quite a bit.
Well, and then like it made Athena look like a bungling dope.
Mid.
So you and Billy Starks are kind of in cahoots. Starks decides to knock out Aubrey Edwards. Then you're still like, let's do a cash in. And you don't see a problem with that, even with no referee. So you make your way down to the ring. And then in a two-on-one situation, which goes on for a very long time, y'all still don't get the job done. It didn't improve the aura of anyone. Tony Storm, I'll say it till I'm blue in the face. I'm just bored of this timeless character. Ageless. I'll put it that way. It may be timeless, but it is not ageless.
Let me put a button on this. I'm tired of the slapshot nature of AEW Dynamite. I know that he has the two matches he wants, and he wants the bangers or whatever, but the filling in, oh, let's get this thing, let's get that thing, not planning promos, doing them live like Ed Wood, having a bracket for a tournament that's empty, like it's Mystery Vortex or DDT, whatever, from PWG. The thing about WWE that they do well is, yes, they have a system. but the system works in terms of here's the couple of stories we're going to tell. We're going to do them in order of big story, mediocre story, big story at the end, much like your essays in high school, kids, how they taught you to write that in English. They do their promos. They do multiple takes if they have to, for the most part. Even though they look live, they are done during the day. And I think part of that is Tony not – my theory was Tony gets to TV on time and everybody else is just kind of rolling in all day. So he's looking around, seeing who he has, and says, okay, today, Etchicero, you're going to be the main eventer.
Yeah, right. Like, and I mean, I also feel like in Tony's head, there's always this sentence that's, say what you will about the rest of the show, that blank match was a banger. That is the sentence he is trying to fill out in his head every week. So it's like, say what you will about all the promos this week, from Ospreay to Hangman and to Moxley. That Hetchicero and Swerve Strickland match really delivered until we hit the DQ finish. Right, guys?
That and look at that treat we just gave you. Oh, wasn't it a surprise that we did this 8-man all-star $200,000 banger of a tag match or whatever, and they never show the results of winning the $200,000. But yes, I agree with you.
Yeah. No, it's say what you will about this. We have this.
Let's do Vader Club. Cause I, you know what? You gave me this match, and me being the Walter of Jeff Dunham fame with the crossed arms and the meh, I don't like kind of a thing. I admit that the early aughts are a blind spot for me because I didn't enjoy them. And oddly enough, I didn't enjoy commentary, but I enjoyed certain little things in this match because Jerry Lawler to me in this period is...
Oh, Yes.
Cole is bad and Jerry Lawler knows better. That's the problem here, is that there's no adult in the room and Lawler is taking advantage of being able to just be Jeff Hawkins with Chris Novembrino and talk all over him.
Well, I'd like the green light from Vince to be like his id.
Yes. Like
Vince basically paid Lawler at this point to be his pathologies.
Yes. Puppies.
Yeah. Right. Yes. No, please. I have all these feelings, Jerry, and I need you to say them. Like that is basically what Jerry is paid for. For me, you know, Jeff Hardy is a guy who, you know, on this show, if you ever listen to this show, I like to beat up on Jeff Hardy's slop. But I wanted to kind of go a different direction for just like a week, especially Vader Club. So we've done so many of these now that I'm like going like, all right, what am I going to do this time?
I kind of get there, but I'm also afraid of repeating stuff, but continue. Yeah,
right. So that's the heads up. Like, all right, I'm going to just try to pick out matches where I have like a thought or whatever, basically like a little editorial of the week.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. That's the whole point of this.
So like, look, this to me is the good Jeff Hardy, willing to take risks, willing to go for good spots or big spots that are like eye captivating and pulling them off. And Steve Blackman was the other reason why I picked this match, because like, Blackman's actually a pretty good wrestler at times.
Yes.
And he just never really got the credit. He's really a sleeper wrestler. He's good. I mean, he's obviously an extraordinarily gifted human being in terms of combat sports, but he's actually a very good wrestler. And you see, there's just any number of matches in this vintage that are mid-card matches that are good because Steve Blackman's doing good shit in it.
Yeah, he gets downgraded because he existed in a world with Jerry Flynn, who was decent, but nothing special. He's also about 10 years, maybe even 15 years too late. Because if he's in Techwood Studios beating up some pasty white Southern jobber with a mullet, giving him sugar holds and stuff like Ron Garvin used to.
Oh,
and
my God.
Garvin got over.
If you could do a two or three, like 3-on-1 with Steve Blackman, where he's just taking on three local talent guys and just like karate demolitioning them. I absolutely. This is a guy, a Southern wrestling promotion in 88 could have gotten over like crazy.
Yes. And imagine him like imagine 87, 88 Steve Blackman versus 87, 88, 89 Great Muda.
Oh
yeah. Oh. I'm I'm torn because I loved the Al Snow head gimmick in ECW and I hated it in WWE. Kind of outlasted its welcome. I always hate Vince humiliating the writers, and I believe that guy that played the writer that was the big fan of Steve Blackman, they got punched in the balls before the match. I believe he's one of the writing team at that time. What I loved, though, I was amazed at Steve Blackman's gracefulness doing that karate kick from the top.
Yes, like that and the belly to belly off the like side area is outstanding stuff.
But his aerial awareness and his gracefulness for a guy that's supposed to be kind of a on his feet kick guy. I watched that. I went, how does nobody see this as an amazing finisher that kills guys?
Right. No, this match, you have just these flashes. I'm like, dude, how did people, I mean, I get where the politics and everything was at the time, but I guess I don't understand why commentary, like the commentary at us, have not actually circled back around on Blackman in the intervening years and been like, yo, dude, this dude had a lot of different tools. Like, I mean, he wasn't a talker, but he had tools.
I'll tell you why, because he's the second tier of guys that Vince didn't see enough in that he should have, because look, even in this period, we were getting to the, hey, these guys are good workers and not just stunt guys or whatever. They should be getting pushed. I mean, people were like, why are we pushing Kurt Angle as a comedy guy right now? Kind of a thing, as opposed to a killer. And I think it's one of those things where, you know, sometimes people get personality overcomes the dumbass ideas of the office, and sometimes it works, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, it's like more people were like, man, this Jeff Hardy, he's really great online, as opposed to, hey, Steve Blackman is a solid dude who should be getting a push. And oh, and of course the Lance Storm, even though this is before Lance Storm was in WWE, he has no personality.
Right.
So
right.
We've teamed him with wackety schmackety Al Snow, who used to be a guy who didn't have any personality, and then all of a sudden found it and then became grating about it. That kind of thing, because Vince looks at a guy and goes, what's your hook, kid? Oh, you're a good martial artist. How can I sell that as entertaining to the people? What do you do for, what's a trick you do? Hey, can you sing? Can you dance? Can you do the Macarena? Whatever, you know, kind of a thing. But, I enjoyed this. Let's wrap it up there, shall we?
One other footnote too, with Blackman. Why didn't Blackman get bigger? He actually crossed fake tough guy JBL. And JBL tried to fight Steve friggin' Blackman. Like, yeah.
I'm
sure JBL's got one version of events, but it's not the truth.
Well, it's not even the worst guy that kicked JBL's ass. You know who else did? Joey Styles. Wasn't going to take that crap from me. Just punched him in the mouth once, you know, or something to that effect.
Yeah.
Mr. I'm the Undertaker's heavy in wrestler court. Bring me beer and food and these, you know, just the bully culture that we were kind of talking about with Hogan a little bit, but even amped up because nobody was ever going to cross wrestler court because Vince liked boys being boys and stop being a little bitch and being friendly with the writers and stuff, you know, that kind of a thing.
And so Hogan did pass some of that along to Undertaker with the whole like phony tombstone neck injury thing.
Yes. Remember?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Where Hogan claimed that like a tombstone from Mean Mark, which is one of the safest tombstones of Mean Mark's entire career, jammed Hogan's neck, Will Ospreay style, herniating all vertebra.
Well, also remember, I mean, Hogan made Jesse Ventura livid by being a stooge about the union.
That's right.
I forgot about that point when we were talking
That's
about
right.
it. Yeah, he was only in it for himself. Yep. F the rest of you, get what you can get. Let's end it there on that happy note. This has been Shake Them Ropes. I'm Jeff Hawkins. You can find me on X at CrapGame13. You can find the show at Shake Them Ropes. We update Vader Club when I have it in time. And when the show comes out, I retweet it and whatnot. I also do a show called The Dynamite Show about 20 minutes after AEW Dynamite goes off the air. Paul Fontaine of Figure Four and I go live on YouTube. That drops in podcatchers for free the next week. Chris has gigs. He's a traveling man playing in a traveling band, and you can find him on Instagram at @DOCTOR_NOV. Buy his records. Buy his music lessons. Make him rich. Go on.
Yeah, well, you know, you're hearing it more and more across the nation. The hottest place to be this weekend is, in fact, Durango, Colorado. That's right. I'm going up there to play with Elevated Roots for a two-day reggae festival. If you are in Durango, Colorado, you aren't, because no one's in Durango, Colorado, but maybe you are. Come out and see me. If you're in the Albuquerque area and you're listening to this show, there are actually some, don't laugh. I have people I know socially, and they'll say things like, we listen to the show. And if they're listening to the show right now, they'll mention that to me. So I'm playing at the Canteen Brew House from 4 to 7 with Elevated Roots. Again, Inversions is nearly complete, if not for the death of a beloved member of the Novan Burrito family, Mr. Michael Fone, who died. He died on Tuesday night, Tuesday night, quietly in his sleep. Actually, mid operation, we were spending time together. We were doing what he loved, which was recording me, and he died doing it. Some say I killed him with my vocals. Others should shut the hell up. And we will be homaging him over the weekend here. And I'm getting a new microphone. Inversions, early mixes are actually on their way here. Things are very much around the corner here. Within the next month or two, definitely within the next month, the single, next 6 to 8 weeks, the album itself. And if you want advanced copy of my own mixes, you can message me on Instagram, DOCTOR_NOV.
Go to Durango, Colorado, land of the white boy dreads.
Hi, I'm Andrew Rich. And if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.
Wrestling Omakase is back, baby. The weekly podcast that takes you across all the top promotions on the entire Japanese wrestling scene, from New Japan to Stardom, NOAH, DDT, All Japan, Mari Gold, Dragon Gate, Tokyo Joshi, Sendai Girls, and a whole lot more. I'm John Carroll, a fan of Japanese wrestling for over 20 years, and every week I'm joined by a rotating cast of guest co-hosts as we break down all the top promotions in Japan, men's and women's. Check out Wrestling Omakase right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network today.